You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey guys, Mike here for Hokie Hangover on behalf of the good folks over at Main Street Pharmacy. Former Downtown Blacksburg Business of the Year in 2019, Jeremy Counts and his staff at Main Street Pharmacy have you covered for all of your pharmaceutical needs. Medication, school supplies, you name it, Jeremy and his staff, family-owned business, they got you covered over at Main Street Pharmacy in Downtown Blacksburg. They've been a sponsor of our podcast since the beginning, going on 5 years now, and there's a reason why. They're extremely reliable, they're good people, they're friends of ours, friends of the podcast. Head on over to Main Street Pharmacy, 301 South Main Street, downtown Blacksburg. Open Monday to Friday, 9 to 6, Saturday from 9 to noon. They're closed on Sundays. You can be reached at 540-605-7721. That's Main Street Pharmacy, 301 South Main Street in downtown Blacksburg.
Hokie Hangover is proud to be sponsored by Homefield, the premium collegiate apparel brand in the United States. Based in Indianapolis, Homefield is committed to creating comfortable and officially licensed apparel featuring vintage college designs. Homefield puts in extra reps for each of the more than 150 colleges they highlight, discovering unique logos, mascots, and iconic moments to create the best look at your tailgate. Go to homefieldapparel.com and use the promo code BEAMERBALL to get 15% off your first order. Homefield makes online shopping so easy, even I can't screw it up. Again, use the promo code BEAMERBALL to get 15% off your first order and acquire blue chip apparel from Homefield, an official sponsor of Hokie Hangover.
Hey guys, Mike here on behalf of our podcast partner, Vivid Seats. That's right, Hokie Hangover Podcast is partnering with Vivid Seats to provide you with all of your ticketing needs. Heading to a game at Lane Stadium this fall, need tickets? Check out Vivid Seats. Going to another college football venue this fall? Use Vivid Seats. Checking out a concert venue even? Vivid Seats has you covered there as well. And they got a promo code just for you. That's right. Go to vividseats.com. Use the promo code BEAMERBALL20 at checkout for $20 off your first order of $200 or more. Again, use the promo code BEAMERBALL20 at checkout for $20 off your first order of $200 or more. We can't thank Vivid Seats enough for their partnership this football season. Make sure to check them out. Hokie Hangover, after ushering in the most successful era of college basketball in the history of Virginia Tech, Kenny Brooks resigned from his position as the head women's basketball coach at Virginia Tech on Tuesday and accepted the head coaching job at the University of Kentucky. It's a 5-year deal for Kenny Brooks. The Athletic is reporting that it will make him the third highest paid coach in the SEC behind Dawn Staley at South Carolina and Kim Mulkey at LSU, obviously two national championship coaches. If that report is true, that will at least double his salary. He was set to make around $975,000 next year at Virginia Tech. We don't know the final salary number at Kentucky, but Kim Mulkey makes $3.15 million per year. Dawn Staley makes $3.1 million. guys, I mean, let's talk immediate thoughts. Virginia Tech was eliminated from the NCAA tournament on Sunday. They lost to Baylor in a very tightly contested contest, a game they easily could have won to go to the Sweet 16, if not for some cold shooting. It's the end of an era, guys, right? Liz Kitley, Kayla King, probably Georgia Amore, even if Kenny Brooks stayed, were all likely to depart. Obviously, Kayla King and Kitley exhausting their eligibility. It was the end of an era from that standpoint on Sunday, but now it's definitive with Kenny Brooks moving on to Kentucky. So, Rick, we'll start with you. Initial thoughts on the Kenny Brooks departure.
So I was lucky enough to interview Kenny multiple times before I stopped covering Virginia Tech athletics as a full-time writer. So I have a limited experience with him and always enjoyed working with him. And on a personal note, I want to wish him and his family the best. With that said, the rest of these comments are coming from a fan's perspective and may or may not weave in and out of rationality. So for those listening, just let me stream my conscience for the remainder of this monologue. I'm really irritated, guys. Like, this has been an incredibly bad, like, 3 weeks for Virginia Tech basketball. And to watch it just, you know, fade away in a matter of just a couple weeks, what has been a real fun, like, 5-6 years plus, right? Like, we've been fortunate as fans to live through what I called a couple years ago the gilded age of Virginia Tech basketball. I mean, it's never been this good on both ends of the hardwood, men's and women's, and we've been very fortunate to be a part of that, and I'm thankful that I got to experience it. But you can't help but get the feeling that, like, we just can't have nice things here. And if the salary numbers are correct, I don't know what Witt would have offered as a raise. He probably would not have been able to match Kentucky, which I think is the reason why Kenny Brooks is gone. And maybe that's part of the reason why I feel so irritated and upset about it, is that it eventually just came down to a paycheck, which, you know, this is going to sound extremely naive, and it probably is, but I was always taught that life is so much more than a paycheck, and I've tried in my life to not make decisions based on money, and, you know, that sounds incredibly stupid when someone's waving $2 million in your face. So, again, I'm weaving in and out of rationality here, but just in from a pure emotional perspective, I'm pretty torn up about it, very disappointed. I'm disappointed for Liz and the fact that her career ended in the way it did. I'm disappointed that Kayla King's career and likely Georgia Amore's career at Virginia Tech ended the way it did. I'm disappointed for the fans that were robbed of another potential Elite Eight, Final Four kind of run. And I'm disappointed that, you know, after watching where this program was before Kenny Brooks, where it was, you know, just scratching and clawing to get to 500 every year, and it never even came close to being at 500 in the conference. You know, knowing that we're not that far removed from those days now, especially since this roster is whatever promising young talent is left on this roster probably won't be here in 3 weeks, just makes it all the worse. So it's a bad situation. It's not going to get any better anytime soon unless Virginia Tech is able to hire a charismatic coach that can somehow keep this core of young players together. Don't put me on the optimistic side of that, but that's kind of my basis right now for where I'm at.
Yeah, and Rick, I mean, I definitely feel a lot of the emotion probably coming on your end, especially because at the dawn or throughout a lot of the period of time where you were covering women's basketball on a regular basis, you saw
especially where I got my start from a sports reporting perspective. This was the first sport that I really got to cover and was fortunate enough to be essentially one of three full-time people in the room for 2 years and got to know Dennis Wolf particularly well when he was the head coach, got to know Kenny when he, in his first few years. So yeah, this is kind of a sport that's close to home for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, no disrespect to Dennis Wolf, of course, who, you know, anyone who came across him knows he's a good man, but at the end of his tenure as Virginia Tech's women's basketball coach, the program wasn't necessarily anywhere outside the basement and not necessarily showing a ton of promise. Kenny Brooks changed that on a dime. And, you know, reading online, you see a lot of feet kissing and stuff like that and saying everyone's like, oh, best of luck. We hope you go win 17 national championships at Kentucky. You're allowed to feel that way if you want. You know, you're also allowed to not feel that way because, like Ricky said, whether it was a paycheck alone, whether he simply got bored with Blacksburg, whether he wanted a new challenge, he chose to leave. And he did say a lot of things over the course of time that would suggest that, you know, he wanted to stay and build something towards a national championship in Blacksburg. And to hear that and to see this news today that Kenny Brooks made on paper, I guess, what seems to be like a lateral move, it's disheartening. The reality is, though, like, this isn't Disneyland. People do things for money and not just the straight up paycheck, but what the potential allows for you. I'm sure we'll cover all the major differences, but Kentucky getting a standalone women's basketball arena, Kentucky playing in the SEC where you're going to get the sprinkles of that football money that's going to go down on every single sport in those SEC and to a lesser extent, but still a major extent, Big Ten athletic departments. Obviously a basketball crazy state, a basketball crazy university with a ton of potential. And to top that on the fact that if you're Kenny Brooks and you're looking as you walk off the court, saying goodbye to Liz, saying goodbye to Kayla, in all likelihood, saying goodbye to Georgia, even if you don't, there's only 1 year left. Things are going to get worse before they're getting better at Virginia Tech on the women's basketball front. And it would take a while to recreate, if you ever could recreate, what they had in Catholic Coliseum over the course of the last two seasons. So if you're Kenny, you're going to sell your stock when it's high, just like Buzz Williams did a couple of years ago, just like plenty of these coaches do. But overall, and I'm sure we'll touch on it at length, I respect the man's decision. I don't love what it shows about Virginia Tech's potential as an athletic department. And again, it makes you want to kick things into a higher gear as fast as you possibly can as the ongoing and still yet coming realignment is in full swing.
Going to try to steer the ship as I usually do as well as I can, but there's just so many different avenues we can go down tonight on this podcast. Let me just start with my general thoughts. Brooks completely revolutionized Virginia Tech basketball, men's or women's. Like, Virginia Tech had never been to a Final Four. Like, he did that. Virginia Tech hosted regionals 2 years in a row. in Blacksburg. Virginia Tech had not been beyond the Sweet 16, had not even been to a Sweet 16 since 1998, before last season.
My favorite fun fact on this one, Virginia Tech's won more ACC games with Liz Kittley playing than they did in the decade plus before without her. And that's just one player. He still had wins without her in the pre-Kittley era.
And to have both Kittley and Amor, two All-Americans, two of the best players in school history on the same team for multiple years, right? To have them both be a part of the Final Four team. Asia Shepherd, one of the best. I mean, she's still the best three-point shooter in school history. She's one of the best players in school history, played under Kenny, recruited by Kenny. Kayla King, we know what she's done from a three-point standpoint, like where she stands in the history books of Virginia Tech. It's a recruiting and development ace that you're losing in Kenny Brooks, flat out. And I understand why Kentucky, you know, why Kenny Brooks was so sought after by Kentucky. I understand it. There's obviously the pull of the salary, right? And I'm sure that Whip Babcock made this as sweet of a deal as possible, but understanding that Virginia Tech is in a position right now in the ACC, conference as a whole is on very, let's call it tenuous footing, and as many resources as possible right now need to go into the football program. And while basketball has a place at Virginia Tech, and while I believe that Whit Babcock understands the importance of basketball at Virginia Tech, both men's and women's, it's not football. Women's basketball has seen an explosion in popularity over the last few years. We can thank the personalities at the top of the sport. We can thank Caitlin Clark, as much as Virginia Tech fans seem to despise her because of her crying about foul calls, specifically in that Charlotte game back at the beginning of the year. But there's an explosion of popularity in women's college basketball. But at most schools, Virginia Tech included, women's basketball still operates at a loss. That kind of is what it is. When it comes down to deciding whether or not you're going to pay a coach 1.5 times the salary, double his salary, right? If the reports from The Athletic are true, at least double his salary to keep him. And that's before considering all of the other elements that Kentucky has to offer. It's different, guys. When it's a basketball school with a standalone arena, SEC money, what they can offer in NIL, it is, while it's a tough conference, and while South Carolina is undefeated and they are a machine, they are kind of putting together, Don Scully's putting together like what Gino Auriemma did for all those years at UConn. And while Kenny will have to go to that conference and compete with that team and that school, and while for now, we'll see about the Kim Mulkey report in the Post, but for now, we'll have to go and compete against a national championship coach in Kim Mulkey. Is the path easier? No. But is it more sustainable to build a program when you have that kind of financial backing that Virginia Tech cannot offer? I'm not talking just salary. I'm talking about everything else included. I understand why it was attractive for Kenny Brooks at this stage in his career. Andrew, the point I think you just made is a really important one about where Virginia Tech is as a program. Yes, Kenny Brooks was bringing in a top 10 recruiting class next year. And yes, Clara Strack looked really, really good right in the NCAA tournament. She was fantastic. And yes, Matilda X coming back. And the roster next year was going to take a step back. But Virginia Tech is not in a position where they're going to be like tailor-made Elite Eight Final Four type team next season. Didn't look that way on paper. This feels like a natural transition for Kenny Brooks if he wanted to decide to try something new. I can understand why this made a lot of sense for him. And doesn't mean we have to like it. as Tech alums and Virginia Tech basketball fans. But I understand the move. I get it from Kenny's standpoint. And he doesn't owe the fan. And the other thing too is, like, I get he's saying like he wants to be here for the long haul. Guys, this kind of stuff is said, that this is the other thing too. This kind of stuff is said by all coaches anywhere they've ever been. Right. And at the end of the day, like, he owes loyalty to his family and to his players. But in the portal era, like you mentioned, Andrew, a lot of the players that have eligibility left are going to follow him to Lexington. And that's the way that it is. He can still show loyalty to his players, maybe just not in Blacksburg.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, like, who on earth has ever told their company? Now, I'm really considering other options. I'm probably out now. You kind of just blindside him. To your point, Mike, he has to do right by his players. He has to do right by his family. I don't think he stabbed the university in the back because, as you said, it's unlikely that we came anywhere particularly close to matching him on just the number alone, and the intangibles would be damn near impossible to match. But I mean, if you're Kenny Brooks, right? You talk about the timing. I heard people conversing. I saw it online. I heard it in real life conversations. Was it Kenny Brooks or Liz Kitley? And, you know, it doesn't have to be a yes or no, a one or the other, because Kenny Brooks brought in and developed Liz Kitley, among others. And you had a great coach combined with an exceptional talent, a handful of exceptional talents. And the result that you get is something special. And that's what we all experienced over the course of the last few years. But if you're Kenny Brooks, it's going to be a lot easier to bring in the next round of Liz Kitleys in a changing era of college sports that's different than the one that you brought Liz Kitley to Virginia Tech in. And let's be clear about that. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure Liz Kitley and Georgia Amar and a lot of those girls were well compensated, as they should have been, because I'd be more likely to buy products that they are sponsoring than almost any other athlete in the entire school. They are awesome. But in a changing world, Kentucky has the goods that Virginia Tech, quite frankly, does not, which leads us to a point where we have to start talking about, can Virginia Tech get there? And Mike, you've been saying on Twitter all day, Virginia Tech is a football school. Virginia Tech needs to focus on getting good at football. That is going to increase the athletic department's overall prospects in the long run more than anything else, because that's what this realignment is centered on. And, you know, a rising tide lifts all ships, right? But how much time do we have? Because I hate to say it, and a lot of people aren't going to like me for this, but I had this thought. You know, we saw Mark Stoops strongly consider leaving Kentucky this year. He ultimately didn't. He ultimately didn't. I think it was the A&M job, obviously, that tickled his fancy. He ultimately ended up staying. Let's just say Mark Stoops were to leave next year, right? Virginia Tech coming off a 10-2 season. You don't think Brent Pry's out for that job, right? Like, I hate to say that. And of course, this is a good problem to have, right? Your coach leaving for a better opportunity is a good problem to have. That means you have had success. But is it possible to get Virginia Tech to the point where we're the destination? I just don't know. I don't know how many Frank Beamers are left out there, at least in sports that make money. And the question I have for you, is that something I'm just going to have to accept at this point? Or is that something that can change, you know, in my lifetime or in the next 20 years or what have you?
Well, Andrew, I want to hit on the Frank Beamer point, because this was one of the things I thought about today as I was kind of preparing for this. The fan base here is uniquely I guess brainwashed has kind of a negative connotation, but we're so used to coaches sticking around and wanting to be here. Frank turned down an amazing offer at North Carolina in the middle of his tenure and stayed. Bud Foster turned down multiple head coaching opportunities and stayed a coordinator at this place and showed that kind of loyalty that we've come to appreciate and maybe wrongfully expect from all of our coaches. And maybe we, as fans, and I'm including myself in this, maybe we need to try and snap out of that. And understand that those situations are just not going to happen in this day and age, because it isn't, it just isn't beneficial, it seems, to stay in one spot for too long. You know, most of your guys that stick around at these jobs don't last for more than several years, and then they're either on to the next one or they're fired. And, you know, Andrew brings up a really good point. Are we just going to have to accept that this is Virginia Tech's fate as a institution in the greater landscape of college athletics? And I think the answer is probably yes. Unless you're going to find that rare oddity, right, that is a Hokie lifer and really doesn't want to go anywhere else and wants to build Rome here. And I just don't know that you're going to find many of those people anymore. And you're certainly not going to find players like that anymore, right? I mean, it's become incredibly difficult to find players that have any loyalty to their school, let alone a coach who can get any number of offers in an offseason to jump ship and go elsewhere. So I guess maybe that's our fault as fans for feeling this way, in the sense that we've established unrealistic expectations of our coaches to have some sort of broader loyalty to the university, to the athletic program in general, and to the fans. Because I kind of thought that was what Kenny was, given that he was a Virginia guy and had been able to build Rome in Blacksburg. And, you know, looking back on it, hindsight is 2020, but the guy left his alma mater for Virginia Tech. And The guy dealt with some personal issues upon doing that. For people who may not remember, Kenny's wife did not come with him originally. And part of his family stayed in Harrisonburg while he moved to Blacksburg to start building this thing. And there was, you know, I'm kind of speculating at this point, but I do remember hearing from multiple people at the time that there were some thoughts that Kenny may not even stick around after the year initially, because he wasn't sure that his family wanted to be there or be in Blacksburg. Ultimately, that ended up not being the case. And Kenny was here for several years, thankfully, and gave us all those fun memories. But it's just, maybe it's saddening on a broader sense that this is what college athletics has become now, that there is so much money involved in doing this, that everything is really run by the bottom line now. And that didn't used to be the case. And, you know, for that, we can thank our overlords at ESPN and the university presidents and your college commissioners and
Greg Sankey.
Yeah. I mean, all of these people that have, you know, for all intents and purposes, shredded the fabric of college athletics and retooled it into something completely different. You know, I think we have them to thank for all of this. And those are the people that have, you know, kind of thrown Virginia Tech, with plenty of other schools, kind of into this limbo phase of not knowing where your place is in the broader landscape and whether or not you can be a destination school like Andrew referenced.
Yeah. And Ricky, to the point that you're making, because I feel the same way. As an alumni of Virginia Tech, and applies to both of you guys as well, and don't even necessarily have to be an alumni to feel this way. When you take time out of the stress of your life, and for you as a fan and as a hobby, you're enjoying Virginia Tech basketball, a lot of the passion is driven by the fact that that's something, you know, the logo and the school and the memories and everything it represents in your life means a lot. And you want to put, as a fan, you're an emotional, you know, stock behind that because it's something that you already care about. And to see someone represent it so well and succeed at such a high level, that means something to you. I personally felt such a great sense of pride seeing that group go to the Final Four last year and watching them grow, you know, throughout that season and throughout the Kenny Brooks era. And I pin him, and I still do, as such a great personal leader, you know, of those girls. And it was all so great. But here's the reality. Like, that was Kenny Brooks's job. If Kenny Brooks hadn't succeeded, he would have been fired. Kenny Brooks hadn't succeeded, he would have been fired. Kenny Brooks has been grinding for his entire career to get to a certain point. If he hadn't succeeded, he would have been fired. I'm saying before the Final Four. He probably would have had a very long tenure at Virginia Tech following this, regardless of what happened based on the success that he's previously had alone. But, I mean, look at Mike Young. Mike Young won the ACC championship, two 500-ish ACC seasons that missed the tournament, you know, ranked in the NIT, and we're like, yeah, this might not be the guy. You're out. We'll talk about him, I'm sure, before this podcast episode ends. But, you know, it's a reality. For us, it means a lot. And it's not to say that Kenny doesn't care about Virginia Tech. I'm sure he will always cherish the memories that he had here. His daughters are alumni of the university, all of them.
It's one daughter still was on the team.
Gabby, I believe, freshman. So
was in middle school when he got to Blacksburg.
You can expect to see her in the blue and white next year.
Yeah, but in reality, it's a business, and you know, it might feel like Disneyland when we're watching and everything's going so well, but it's days like this that make you realize that you know, it's not all a fairy tale, and there's a lot more harsh realities that go behind it.
And I just want to drive this point home. I don't think it's good for the sport that's where we're at. I don't think it's good for fans. I don't think it's good for people that are directly associated with the program. I don't think it's good for players. I don't think that it's good that we've lost some of that pageantry and magic that made college athletics so fun. And look, I'm full of it to an extent, right? Because the ratings just continue to go through the roof on these games. Especially on women's basketball, right? With Caitlin Clark, her games are outnumbering the men considerably at this point.
Yeah, the ratings are outrageous.
Yeah, for Caitlin Clark games. Well, but just in general, ratings are up, right, for all of these sports, and so obviously the fans are still enjoying the product. But I think we'd be remiss to just ignore the fact that college athletics is not what it was 20 years ago, and when I grew up playing, you know, NCAA 05 with, I think, Larry Fitzgerald on the cover, like that brand of college athletics just does not exist anymore. And I'm on the side of thinking that that's not good for parties involved outside of being good financially for coaches and presidents and commissioners and, you know, players as well. But I don't think that's all this money that's coming into to the landscape has not made the product connect more with the fan on a deeper emotional level.
Well, yeah.
Well, Rick, I mean, you know, fans could connect more with Major League Baseball players when they made the same salary as the fans, right? Like, and well, I totally get what you're saying.
I don't see that, though, with professional sports. You've always known that people were making a living. That's a job. But college athletics used to be so much more than making a living and a job. And given that, you know, players are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year now in NIL, and they're renegotiating their deals in the off season and leveraging their NIL deals with other schools to get better deals and moving on.
That's the issue. That part's the issue.
Yeah, it really just has created essentially a semi-pro league that's, you know, super wild, wild west, and there's no level playing field for these teams to compete across. So, you know, you're getting all of the bad stuff about professional sports, right? That makes it very cutthroat and business and bottom line driven. And you're not getting any of the good things about the old part of college athletics. So I don't know that I like the comparison to Major League Baseball there, in the sense that, you know, their salaries have made it harder for fans to connect to the average player, because I felt that the fan has always been able to connect with these players on a deeper level that had nothing to do with money.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand that, and I know it's not necessarily an apples to apples comparison. I'm just saying that, to an extent, like I remember years ago, this guy named, I think his name was Nigel Hayes. He played for Wisconsin, and he just spoke on the fact that, you know, it's crazy, I'm playing in the Final Four. Like, I can't leverage this into helping my mother buy groceries, right? Like, that wasn't fair either. There is a middle ground. I think the Wild Wild West free agency type nonsense, that is something that is going to need to be fixed. It's going to need to be fixed by the people in Washington, which leads me to believe that it's not going to be fixed anytime soon. Of course, you know, you can't.
That right.
Can't the trust the NCAA to get it right.
The fact that these clowns running the college athletics think that Congress is going to provide some sort of workable and functional solution is either A, it's incredibly stupid, or B, it's inherently like vindictive and manipulative.
Well, I mean, you get politicians in here who don't watch the games, right? And they're just as clueless as the TV execs who don't watch the games, and they're both combining to ruin the sport. And I'm referring to college football specifically here, because that's what's driving all this conference realignment. And not to totally derail the conversation or kind of go back to a previous point, but the point you guys were making about like Virginia Tech, like being a stepping stone school in terms of basketball jobs, or, you know, if we played Andrew's scenario out, right, with Pry, right, if he were to leave and go elsewhere after a successful season on the football side, my personal opinion is that Virginia Tech, if it gets left out of this power two, this Big Ten SEC, and essentially becomes a group of five type school on the football side, which is driving everything from conference realignment to revenue for the athletic department, because Virginia Tech is a major, you know, college and, you know, Division I FBS institution. Yeah, Virginia Tech's going to continue to be a stepping stone for across all sports. And that's the point I was trying to make today, you know, on social media, where like, it's so important for Virginia Tech to get football right, because football is driving everything, not just realignment, but from a money standpoint. And, you know, everybody's concerned about, okay, Virginia Tech wasn't able to pay Kenny Brooks today, or wasn't able to, you know, provide the resources outside of just his salary in the way that Kentucky can. And look, Virginia Tech, I don't think, is ever going to be in a position where they're going to be able to compete and go toe-to-toe with a school that prioritizes basketball in the way that Kentucky does. But the one thing I do think is that Virginia Tech, from a athletic department health standpoint, right, and we know how well the other schools are doing. Virginia Tech just, you know, a second national champion in wrestling, baseball programs top 15, softball looks like they're going to host Super Regional again. Like, we know the success. We know, obviously, we've been talking about women's basketball the entire night. Like, the sports themselves and the coaches in a lot of the sports are doing well, right? And even Mike Young, he's a couple years removed from an ACC championship. The sports themselves and the coaches within the sports are doing quite well. The issue that Virginia Tech runs into is when they get into a conversation with a blue blood from an SEC or a Big Ten school, they're going to lose that battle a lot. And to get out of that, I think Virginia Tech needs to do everything in their power to make sure that they're continuing to better themselves from a financial standpoint. And I hate it just as much as you guys do. I do. I think, you know, you guys know my feelings on this. I agree with everything, and I echo everything both of you had said. Like, you know, television executives ruining the sport. The fact that the Pac-12 just totally disintegrated this year over television contracts is crazy. Like, the direction of college athletics right now is out of control. You know, we're coupling NIL with the portal and immediate eligibility, where both of those things are really good when you have them in a silo, but when you combine them together, it's just not a good situation, right? For guys to be able to negotiate new NIL deals like Ricky was referring to and leverage it against offers from other schools. There's rampant tampering across the sports. It's just not good, right? The landscape's not good. There's no guardrails around any of it. It's a disaster. But Virginia Tech needs to better itself in terms of putting themselves in the best financial situation possible. And doing that means making sure you're part of the next stage of conference realignment, making sure that you're part of the conversation in what right now looks like it's just going to be the SEC and the Big Ten. You need to get in that conversation. You need to join one of those conferences. If you're not going to be in one of those conferences, this is going to continue to be a school that's going to be a stepping stone for bigger institutions with more money and more resources. That's just the way it's going to be. And I think fans, you know, going back to the, you know, having fair expectations, fans are going to have to deal with that. Like, I guarantee you that Whit Babcock went into a discussion like into this weekend, this past weekend, knowing that Virginia Tech was likely playing its last women's basketball games under Coach Kenny Brooks. Like, Kenny was communicative. Whit knew where he stood. Like, we knew the situation going into the weekend was tentative, tenuous, however you want to put it. It wasn't looking spectacular that Kenny Brooks was going to be back, because we knew the type of school they were competing against from a financial standpoint and, you know, the basketball school that they are. We knew where Virginia Tech was at. Mark Berman from the Roanoke Times talked to Whit Babcock. He said, you know, the ball's in Kenny's court. We know Whit did everything he could to keep Kenny, but there does come a point in time where, like, you're not going to overstep that line, because this isn't your football coach. And as much as I love Kenny Brooks and what he did for the university and the unprecedented success of this basketball program under him, this is not football. It's not and that's just the way it is. Virginia Tech is and always will be a football school. If we were talking about Brent Pry taking Virginia Tech to a college football playoff and he was in talks with another SEC school or Big Ten school, you know, trying to, you know, leverage that into a new contract or what have you, Virginia Tech would do everything in its power to keep Brent Pry. I believe they did what they could to keep Kenny Brooks, but there comes a time where you take a step back. It's a women's basketball program that's still operating at a loss. And when you're Whit Babcock in that position, you can't act on emotion. Like, he's not paid the money that he's paid to act on emotion. And as much as it hurts to kind of cut ties and cut that rope and say, look, we can't overextend here, and it hurts and it sucks and the fans hate it, that's why he has to make the decisions that he makes. And given his basketball hiring record, I understand it. I get it. It's tough. It's a tough day. I ranted a little bit there, but
yeah. Well, I mean, I think
I echo all the stuff you said.
It's a show of rants. It's what we do.
Sorry.
We've all kind of gone off the rails a bit, which, speaking of which, I'm going to do that again. I want to ask you guys kind of a big brain question here. And it may sound really stupid, but it's something I've been thinking more and more about as the landscape of college athletics continues to change, and all the plates are shuffling around and chairs are being removed from the game. Would you rather be in the Big Ten, winning anywhere from 7 to 9 games a year, but never really cracking through into that elite group because you can't keep up with some of the more traditionally good, historical, powerful programs and institutions.
Ohio State, Michigan.
Yeah, Ohio State, Michigan, or like throw it in the SEC, you know, Alabama, LSU, Texas A&M, whatever, Georgia, Florida. Or would you rather be out of that group and have a chance to win whatever the top prize in that group was?
So do I want to be in a perpetual NIT?
Essentially. So like right. for anyone that's listening that may be a soccer fan.
Yeah.
Do you want to perennially, you know, get your teeth kicked in and tops finish, you know, like 6th or 7th in the Premier League? Or do you want to play in the Championship, which is the second league in England?
And do you
want to compete for titles? Like
this is fair. A fair question.
I think it's a question we're going to have to ask ourselves as
that's where it's trending.
As this stuff goes.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't know what my answer is. I don't know if I'd rather be Vanderbilt in the SEC and you know, it may be marginally better than Vanderbilt, or if I would rather be, I don't know, Memphis or UCF. Or something like that in that kind of realm. I don't know what my answer is, guys. I really don't.
Well, first of all, in Andrew Alex's version of the future of college football, it operates
like
European soccer where you can get relegated, and brought up and brought down. So
that would be
for success.
At this point, I think that would be ideal, but
it would make more sense
than
just bring back the old conferences for every other sport, make college football its own standalone thing. What have you? I mean,
essentially, what we're seeing. I don't know if you guys remember several years ago the huge European clubs were looking at breaking away and doing that Super League, where essentially, I mean, the Premier League would be destroyed, the top league in Italy, top league in Germany, top league in Spain, all of the countries' premier top of the line, or organizations were just going to be ripped apart for this giant Super League.
Greg Sankey's eyes lit up, and that's when he first had the idea in his head that.
Yeah, so it seems like college athletics, especially in the football side, is heading in this direction, where you're going to have two Super Leagues, and these Super Leagues are going to control the entirety of the sport from a rules, a governance perspective.
You're already seeing it with like revenue sharing and the college football playoff.
You know, the SEC and Big Ten wanting all these automatic qualifiers for the playoff. I mean, look, we haven't had any bleeps at this point, but I'm gonna do my best Elon Musk impression. Go fuck yourself. Like I am so sick of these power hungry jackasses trying to destroy the fabric of the sport. But that's a different discussion. I don't know what my answer is. I don't know where I'd rather be, honestly, because being you know, kind of a mediocre team in the SEC, being Mississippi State, or I'm trying to think of another program, or being
South Carolina,
Illinois,
Kentucky.
I don't know.
That was good. I'm proud of myself.
I don't know what's better. I really don't know what's better, guys.
Well, Rick, here's the problem with the Super League thing, right? Because if we remember what happened and why that Super League never became a thing, was because the fans literally were like storming the stadium saying, you can't do this.
The fans revolted.
You're ruining the fabric of our sport. In college football, we have fans getting in arguments online. My school makes more television revenue than your school.
Like, yeah.
And we're eating it up, right?
We just keep
watching and we watch all of these, you know, all these. We want 14 teams in the playoff. Oh, we want 67 teams.
Alex Kirshner.
Oh, we want the college basketball men's tournament to be 127,000 teams. I mean, fans just continue to feed this monster.
This came up. Split Zone Duo podcast, fantastic national college football podcast. Alex Kirshner brought this up because they were having a discussion along similar lines with like the Super League thing and how there was a revolt and how college football fans in the United States just simply are not built for this shit. Like they aren't in terms of like revolting and pushing back. It's and he brought up something similar, right? Where he was like, I'm, you know, my school makes more money than yours. You know, I'm cool if your school gets left behind. We're simply just not built for it. Like we are more than willing to kind of just let the sport just eat itself entirely crumble, and just totally disintegrate from like within. Right. And it's tough. And yeah, I mean, it's actually pretty funny from just like a macro sense. You talk about, okay, do you want Virginia Tech to be like the best of the group of five, because that's just the best way to kind of frame it.
Like this the best is of be like the group of eight.
But... yes. The best of the non-power two, or yeah. Do you want to be a mediocre school in the power two? And even like with the expanded college football playoff and whatever way, shape, form that takes, like, okay, if you're a mediocre school and you're not getting into the mix, but you're still the Big Ten or the SEC and you're like making all this money, you're just like not good enough to compete with like the top dogs in the sport.
Is the money guess, worth it?
Yeah, right. Guess where we're at, guys? We're at the same spot we're at right now. Oh, okay. Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, Georgia. They're the best teams in the sport still? Oh, okay. All you did, and this has been, we've talked about like the parity, right? Everybody talks about parity in the sport. And how the top dogs just every year, most years, tend to just be five steps ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
Guess what? They're still going to be five steps ahead of everybody else. This expanded college football playoff and all the money at play with these two power conferences, if the scenario plays out where Vanderbilt is still Vanderbilt, Mississippi State's still Mississippi State, Indiana is still Indiana, Illinois, like you name that mediocre conference school in the power two, if they're still the way they've always been, like 7, 8, 9 wins, they're still just as far away from a national championship as they were before, even with all this increased money. Oh, okay. Are they a little bit closer to a national championship than like Memphis or Liberty or you name that group of five schools? James Madison. Sure they are, but they're further, they're closer to getting to a national championship from a financial backing standpoint than those schools are right now anyway. It makes no difference. That's the thing. Like you talk about the greed and the money, the end result is going to be the same. Everybody talks about, oh, expanded playoff access. Oh, congrats to a group of five. You got a guaranteed bid now. It doesn't matter. Okay, great. They got in. They're going to get waxed, right? If they pull an upset in the first round, great. And when people talk about, oh, college football, college basketball, like, oh, we see upsets in college basketball. College football is different than college basketball. College basketball is not predicated on size, speed. It's not a collision sport. It's a contact sport. It is totally different. It's apples to oranges. When people make those comparisons, with upsets, it makes me crazy. But could you have an upset in the first round of the expanded playoff? Sure, you can. But when push comes to shove and UCF is playing against Georgia in the Peach Bowl, if that's like a quarterfinal, they're going to be a 3-touchdown underdog and they're going to lose. And that's what's going to happen year after year after year.
I mean, just look what happened to TCU. TCU is an upstart, middle-of-the-road Power 5 program.
Had been meddling for years.
They got
Gary Patterson, far removed from the success they had early in his tenure.
Yeah,
far removed from.
They got hot, and then when it came time, they just. I mean, how many points did they give up? 70?
A trillion.
Yeah,
a trillion. That game was over at halftime. You know, Herb Street and Fowler are just like making up storylines in the second half. They have no idea what to talk about.
Yeah.
Like this stuff is still going to happen, which is why the expansion, it's still just making me crazy.
It doesn't solve any actual problems. All it does is feed more cash to ESPN, more cash to these elite programs, which God knows that's exactly what they needed, was more of the people's money.
And you don't want to fall, and Andrew, I'm sorry, I'm going to let you talk, I promise. We don't want to fall further behind, right? So, like, you want to get into the power two, and in the context of this basketball discussion, you want it to be like a rising tide lifting all ships situation where you have that money and you have that backing. You could be more competitive with these coaches in the other sports that are not college football, right? Because there is more parity in college basketball than there is in college football. But you don't want to be left out of that conversation. But at the end of the day, you're still going to end up being kind of in the same place you were before if you are a mediocre school in that power two. I think if you're left out, you're just going to be further behind, right? You may not be any closer to winning a national title, but you'll definitely be further away, which is why I would prefer to be like a Mississippi State or like a Kentucky for football. I'd prefer to be like that 8 or 9 win team in the SEC and maybe have a chance, right, to be like a top 12 team or a top 16 team, get into the expanded playoff and let the chips fall where they may. But I don't think the landscape of college athletics is in a very good state at all, because at the end of the day, I think we're just going to end up at the same spot we were before. And all we did was ruin a bunch of conferences in the process and line the pockets of people who are already billionaires. Great. Awesome that we did that. They don't even watch the sport. Why did we do, like, what the hell are we doing? What are we doing? That felt good. I'll go on mute now and pet my dog.
That was good. You've said everything I kind of want to say. I was nodding my head there as Mike made his point, thinking, yeah, we could beat Illinois. We could beat Illinois. We could do that. We could beat Northwestern. I think so. At the same time, we're having this hypothetical situation of being in the Big Ten where we just can't get past Ohio State and Michigan. Yeah, newsflash, gentlemen. Virginia Tech hasn't had a winning regular season record in the ACC in like 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, this is the same program that lost to Marshall last year.
Yeah. And Old Dominion 2 times in the last 5 seasons.
Yeah. We got to go back to Norfolk this year. God.
So, you know, a lot of work required there. Would it be better? Like, I mean, I guess the overall key point, right? Like, Virginia Tech's not competing for national championships right now anyway. Like, that's reality.
No,
you hope to get there. Thing is, when you're out on the outside looking in, you can't even have the hope and dream of ever doing it. Whereas if you're in that mix, it's a possibility that you could be Washington or TCU and come in.
Yeah, but there's like, Vanderbilt has no hope, right? I mean,
well, ideally we're not going to be Vanderbilt.
God,
if the situation is Vanderbilt.
Mississippi State has no hope.
They think they have hope.
They're
well, what hope
wrong.
Does Virginia Tech currently have, right? Like,
what you're saying is they need to be
Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, or Georgia, or Texas, or Oklahoma to win the national championship. You're probably right, but then what does it matter anyway?
But that's kind of my point, in the sense that, do I want to be cannon fodder for, you know, so I can watch Michigan drop 57 points at Lane Stadium, and, you know, Virginia Tech is a 3-touchdown underdog anytime we go to play these big programs? Or do I want to watch Virginia Tech play programs that have similar obstacles and have similar, you know, the fabric of our universities and our programs are relatively close. We have fan bases that are close by. There's a chance to maybe have some sort of meaning to these games, as opposed to just serving as ESPN's 7 o'clock slot. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm to the point now where I'm just so sick and tired of these games not meaning anything anymore. I mean, people used to not give a shit who the national champion was in college football.
Conference championships mattered.
Yeah, I mean, like,
gone by the wayside now.
There are some people in the southern part of this country that care more about who wins the SEC championship than who wins the national championship. Now you can make the argument.
It's the same team.
Yeah, I was going to say you can also make the argument that the national championship is often between two SEC teams. So in a way, it kind of is an SEC championship, but I just don't know that I want to be, you know, the doormat for Ohio State to make sure they get their 10th win every year. I don't know that that's a better outcome. And maybe I'm just being absurd and ridiculous, and, you know, often I can be on this podcast, but I think that fans, a perfect example, right, is Maryland, okay? Maryland joined the Big Ten purely, and Rutgers, Andrew, joined the Big Ten purely for financial reasons. They had no connection to this conference. They don't belong in this conference geographically or from a university perspective. And they are absolutely 100% irrelevant when it comes to the postseason outcome of this conference every single year. And it doesn't matter who they hire as the head coach. It doesn't matter what transfer quarterback they bring in. The result is still the same. So outside of adding to your revenue every year where you're bringing in 50 plus million a year in TV rights, what did you accomplish as a university for your program? Nothing. Zero. Zilch. And I guess that's what I'm afraid that Virginia Tech might end up becoming if we somehow make it into this, you know, power 30 teams or power 40 or whatever the fuck it's going to end up being. Is that what we want to be? Like, is that an enjoyable experience? Will it mean anything when Virginia Tech is hosting a game on Saturday at Lane Stadium?
I love the theoretical. I'm worried about what happens if Virginia Tech is given the opportunity to ruin their program. But I mean, that's the conversation that we have to have. I mean, here's the thing, right? Outside, and we're obviously, we being the three of us on the podcast, and we can also loop in any single listener to this podcast, because I know one thing about all of you, we all have a common interest, and that's why we're all here.
Yeah.
You know, the three of us, when Virginia Tech plays a regular season game against Wake Forest, we're going to do roughly an hour and a half each before and after on it. Ricky's going to go out and write about it. Mike's going to go out and write about it. We're going to spend all week reading about it, both on Twitter and, you know, other people's content. 95% of the country doesn't even know that game is being played. Everyone has a good idea of, you know, when Michigan's playing Penn State, you know, it's going to go on national TV at night. That doesn't take away from our interest and passion towards the outcome of Virginia Tech's football game. I guess what we want is, first of all, we want to be good, right? Like, everyone wants their team to be as good as they possibly can. We want to be recognized. What worries me is it, like, ever truly not mattering to the point where any player would always choose to go to Maryland over Virginia Tech, because why wouldn't they? Maryland has such greater financial and otherwise opportunities for these players that it would be a no-brainer that you would always go to the Maryland over the Virginia Tech, because Maryland's in the club and Virginia Tech is not. So it's hard for us to be on the outside looking in right now, because we don't know how that's going to break down and we don't know how it's going to shake out, and whether Maryland would still be Maryland and they're in the club, and Virginia Tech could be in that best of the rest category, beating Wake and Duke and Oklahoma State on their way to the whatever championship, vying for their college football playoff bid. Like, as long as the games still matter to the fans and there's still, like, relevance around the program, like, I'll still be cool with it. I mean, we could go down to D2, I'd still be a fan and I'd still care. But if it got to the point where, no, like, 9 times out of 10, we're not going to beat Illinois, they're in the club and we're not, then you have to be in the club. You have to be in the club at that point.
Yeah.
I guess for me, it's that as a fan, of this program, I care a whole hell of a lot more when Virginia Tech plays West Virginia than I do when Virginia Tech plays Oklahoma State, or God, now we're going to play SMU and Stanford and Cal. Like, those games don't have the deeper meaning that college football games have always carried. Virginia Tech-Miami games mean something every year. Virginia Tech-Virginia games mean something every year. The Virginia Tech-Miami game, or sorry, I already said that one. The Virginia Tech-Pittsburgh game has historically meant something every single year. Before Maryland dipped to the Big Ten, the Virginia Tech-Maryland game always meant something. Those games have the historical power behind them, the fact that you're close to these people, you've seen them every damn year for the last three decades. You probably know a bunch of people that are fans and alumni of that school, and you're sick and tired of them because that one year in 2007, they had to come back and yada, yada, yada. The passion and the enjoyment in those games is so much deeper and meaningful than Virginia Tech is now going to travel to SMU and, you know, have to get on a plane to go to Dallas and, you know, watch SMU put up 55 because, you know, our defense is bad or whatever. The games mean more when there's something more than just the outcome of the game that matters. And that's why we all get up for Virginia every single year, even though Virginia Tech has wiped the floor with the Hoos more often than not for the last two decades. So I guess I just want fans to caution themselves and think about, why did you start watching this in the first place? And try not to lose that. Because if Virginia Tech gets to a point where we're playing Mississippi State every year, or we're playing Indiana every year, I have a feeling those games are not going to be as fun.
I agree with points you both made.
Remember when we were talking about Kenny Brooks?
Yeah, I was about to say, pretty good for a women's basketball podcast.
Well, I think a lot of this conversation, though,
is kind of the broader stuff important. Play that directly impacts stuff like this, where Virginia Tech can't keep their women's basketball
game. It's all I've been thinking about all day is the health of the athletic department. Because, I mean, you can talk about the individual coaches and what Pete DeMore is doing, right? And what John Sheff's doing and Tony Roby and, you know.
Yeah, Tony Roby, man, is an absolute unit in wrestling.
What Mike Young has done, winning a conference championship. We could talk about all these like Brent Pry leading this, you know, ushering this new era of Virginia Tech football and kind of bringing them out of the abyss, we think, right? Like, we talk about the individual successes of all these coaches, right? But I'm talking, like, overall health of the athletic department. This is why we're having this conversation, this broader conversation that started out with Kenny Brooks leaving for Kentucky, is because this broader conversation we had here tonight drives everything. It drives absolutely everything. It informs Whit Babcock's hiring it competency, right? In terms of what he can and can't do. Like, it controls everything.
And really quick, people are asked, like, someone was in my mentions earlier saying we need to fire Whit Babcock.
Insane.
Stop it. Stop.
Insane.
You don't fire an athletic director because he lost his women's basketball coach.
With more resources that's doubling his salary.
When it comes to firing an athletic director, there are two sports that you look at. And it's football and it's men's basketball. That's the way it is.
And we talked about it on the football side. If you want to evaluate
Whit Babcock on those two and you want to have that conversation, fine. Don't bring up half of the conversation because the women's basketball program has to have a reboot.
After 1 year removed from a Final Four, you lose all credibility when you bring that up as a bullet point in that conversation. You lose all credibility.
Yeah, his hire had too much success. Fire him.
Come on. No, but okay. Here's an interesting question there, because
Dennis Wolf again,
tying it all back together. Could bring Dennis Wolf back. I did hear the possibility maybe we move Mike Young to the women's side. I don't know.
I saw that joke floated around. I was like, all right, we'll do
it. Shout out. That was Jimmy Cleveland. We love Jimmy Cleveland.
Would be cheaper. It's that. I mean, we're looking to save some money. We'll just pay him the same salary to coach both teams. It'll be like basically like old school, like high school open gym, where like you run in practice with the boys varsity and then girls varsity is right after, vice versa.
Okay.
Long day for the coach.
That's why he gets paid the big bucks.
That's right. That's why he gets paid the big bucks.
It's like he's got to work like 200 hours a week.
With Babcock, you know, season-ending meeting with Mike Young, like, you may think I'm here to fire you. I'm actually here to expand upon your role.
Get ready to learn women's basketball, buddy.
We make a Netflix documentary series on it.
Oh, you're doing both.
So here's what I was thinking, right? Before the season on the women's side, I believed that the women's basketball program was Virginia Tech's best chance to get that elusive first national championship. Obviously, that didn't happen. It's frustrating, especially because it was never truly given an opportunity to play itself out, given the injury of the best player in program history prior to the term. Now, to what Ricky said with the golden age or the gilded age of Virginia Tech basketball, you can include both the men's side and the women's side. The best thing, true or false, the best thing that Virginia Tech can do to try to return to the gilded age of basketball, to try to get back to the point on both sides, men's with Buzz and into early Mike Young, women's at Pete Kenny, to win some football games, get in the American Association of Universities. Is that our only hope of returning to the level of prominence that we expect?
No. I don't think the football program really correlates with men's and women's being competent and winning conference championships.
What I'm saying is the windfalls of NIL. Yeah,
I think most of those windfalls end up back in the...
I mean, why is Alabama suddenly finishing as a top three seed every year? It's because they have leftover money from all the money they're making playing football.
They've got some really good shooters on their team. That's all I'll say.
Just relax.
Shout out Brandon Miller.
Relax. Jesus. Are we talking like one off? Or are we talking? I'm not talking about the shooters. I'm talking about I'm talking about what you just asked, Andrew. Are we talking like one off successes? Or are we talking like consistency?
I'm talking about if you want consistent success. Virginia Tech fans seem to expect the Virginia Tech men's basketball team to make the NCAA tournament every year or every other year. I mean, expectations are so reasonable. In order to do that, right, are we going to need to get into a major conference? Like,
I don't think so. You've got a bunch of mid-majors that can make the men's tournament as, you know, in bad conferences every year.
Elite Eight, Final Four, still no? You don't think that the revenue sharing has any impact?
Well, I think it definitely does. The thing about the mid-majors is, like, on the basketball side, because this is like two different conversations, right? We have the basketball side, we have the football side. The mid-majors on the basketball side, they can make one-off runs and they can be consistently like tournament good, right? Wichita State, back when they had Creighton. Greg Marshall, consistently. Creighton, what they were as a mid-major before joining the Big East, like Butler with Brad Stevens. I'm just pulling out like all these mid-majors that were like prominent, consistently good, made Final Four, or I guess in Butler's case, made a national championship, was very close to winning one. Like, you can do that when your focus is basketball. Butler doesn't have a football program. Like, their focus is solely basketball. Like, a lot of these mid-majors, like, basketball is what everything, like, all their money is going into. So they have a better chance of success until they get into the deeper rounds of the tournament. And it's really just, like, one-off situations where you see a team like a Butler consistently get back to a Final Four and be national championship good. I think by and large, like having a strong football program, being in a major conference, I think while I don't think it's necessarily like the indicator of basketball success, I think it's an indicator of health of your basketball program where you can, you know, make a decision. You know, Kentucky's football team has been pretty good in the SEC now for a while. Like Mark Stoops has kind of raised the ceiling there for kind of what they've been historically. He's been that kind of coach for the football program. It's why they just paid him the amount of money they did to keep him away from Auburn. It's why Kentucky can now think about, and they're keeping John Calipari. That came out tonight, but it's why they can even consider paying him a $33 million buyout. It's because you have a lot of money flowing in on the football side. Obviously, you have a lot of money flowing in on the basketball side. But health of your football program at most universities, not even just like not named Kentucky, not named Duke, not named Kansas, like the health of your football program in a power conference matters immensely to whether or not you can pull the trigger if a coach is not working out and hire the next guy and not really worry about the financial implications of it to the degree that, you know, some of these smaller schools have to. I think it helps from a consistency standpoint. Yes, I do. I think in order for the men's and women's programs to be consistently good year over year, I think the revenue is, especially in this age of college athletics with NIL and how that's powering roster building, I think you have to absolutely be in a power conference for the for these sports to continue to have consistent success. Now, my answer would have been a lot different a few years ago. My answer would have been a lot different. But now NIL and your NIL bag is everything. It is everything if you're in a power conference. It means more than anything, almost anything else. Like, on the football side, people used to talk about resources. They talk about, like, oh, what's your practice facility like? Your locker rooms, your meeting rooms. You know, because that was the talking point at Virginia Tech for a while under Fuente pre-NIL. It was like, oh my God, these meeting rooms suck. Oh man, we need to upgrade our football facility. Who gives it? Now it's like, who gives a shit about that? Who cares? I mean,
can just practice out in a shed.
Ask Mike Leach and Craig James about that. People were asking about, we'll know that one. Ask me about what happened to the Castle renovation project. What happened to it? Oh, I know. NIL happened. The football program's health happened. Conference realignment happened. There's a reason why Castle isn't being renovated right now.
Yeah,
like, these plans were laid out years ago, and that's been totally by the wayside. Not by the wayside. Like, I think it's still something they want to do eventually, but it's kind of been taken
a backseat. Yeah,
it's been tabled for NIL and football program health.
Well, that, and you've got Power Five, well, I guess Power Four now, coaches after the year saying, don't donate to the program, donate to the collective so they can pay the players.
Right. Because to get around that, because, you know, the schools can't technically be paying the players, but the NIL collectives can.
Yeah. So, like, schools are actively now trying to shun donations to get them to go to the collective.
Which is, it's so funny too, because, like, you know, the NCAA rules, like, the rules that Congress set forth, because the NCAA just decided they were going to sit on their hands for two decades of dealing with this. How it is now is the schools can't pay players, but collectives can. Okay, fine. So the collective and the school, they work hand in hand. Triumph NIL was in the room with the Virginia Tech football coaching staff for two consecutive signing days. And we're going to pretend like the university isn't playing a heavy hand in making sure certain players get paid, get the money they're supposed to get. Like, give me a break, guys. Like, we know it's just the state of how things are right now. So to go back to your point, Andrew, your question, Andrew, yes, I do think the power conference, with the way NIL is dealt with, I think for consistent success, especially if you're Virginia Tech, I think for consistent success of your basketball program, so you can ensure that you don't lose a Buzz Williams quality coach, you don't lose, which I know he's got his own, he's a Texas guy, all that stuff. but you don't lose that kind of coach, right? You don't lose a Kenny Brooks again. I think it's really important to make sure your overall financial health as an athletic department is in a spot it needs to be relative to your peers and who you're competing against.
Pretty wide-ranging podcast there, boys.
That was good. Yeah. I mean, we can't talk about anything else because I will rant for, I mean, we've been talking for an hour and 20 minutes almost. Oh, I have one more question, and I hope this isn't like a long-winded topic. I do have one more question. How different do you guys think today looks with Kentucky chasing Kenny Brooks and ultimately luring him to Lexington? How different does today look if Virginia Tech holds off LSU in the fourth quarter of the Final Four last year, gets to Iowa in the national championship game, and he wins the school's first team national title? How different does today look?
Can't imagine it looks any better.
I agree.
I mean, and you know, this kind of goes back to a thought I had, and you know, Kentucky women's basketball is not a bad program. Like, historically, they've made their share of Sweet 16s and
few Elite Eights.
Yeah, they had a coach. I think his last name was Matthew or something along those lines.
Matthew Mitchell.
Yes, who was a perennial, like, in the tournament, one of the top teams in the country, top 15 program, before he had to retire because of a medical issue. So that's something to consider. But I mean, like, Virginia, like, Kenny Brooks built an elite program in Blacksburg. To just walk away from that is kind of hard to watch. And if you were to add a national championship to that, A, I'm not sure he walks away. But B, if he did, that would be like a, you know, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, put this knife in your heart and just, you know, walk away.
I think the willpower to keep him, if he does get that first extremely obviously elusive team national championship, I think the power of the people comes together and
at the expense of football.
Yeah.
Nothing makes you a basketball school more than winning a national title in basketball before you win one in football. Like, that's like the broader, that's kind of the broader takeaway in my mind. Like, if things went a little bit differently last year, that Tim Sands, like, it's now been memed so many times, we're a basketball school, that comes to fruition. Like, Virginia Tech is a basketball school at that point, if they're winning national titles in basketball and they're not winning them in football. You're a basketball school now, right? Like, that changes the direction in terms of how you fundraise, how the athletic department, how the donors view basketball relative to football. That would be kind of, that was a thought I had. But as far as like whether or not Kenny would leave, like, I agree the willpower would be there to pay him and like overextend. And maybe Kenny feels a stronger pull to stay, right? Because he did win a national title. Or maybe he just feels the same thing he felt today, that he has a better opportunity to win more consistently in the SEC at Kentucky than he would at Virginia Tech. I don't know ultimately what that answer would be, but it's an interesting, it's a thought-provoking question, for sure. It's my thought.
Well, one we don't have to deal with.
That's correct. Yeah, don't need to worry about it. He's gone, and Virginia Tech still has no team national titles. So, shout out Caleb Henson, wrestling. Big time, man. I had 149 pounds, second individual champion in wrestling for Virginia Tech in the last 4 years, joining multiple-time All-American Makai Lewis, who concluded his career, didn't quite make it back to a national title match. But incredible career for him. So that there was something good that came out this weekend.
Yeah, and I guess to wrap this up on a bad note, Lynn Kidd is in the portal. John Camden is also in the portal, but I'm not going to be pretty honest. I'm not all that torn up about that one. We'll have to revisit this women's discussion once we see what the roster looks like after Kenny has had his pickings. I would envision that this roster is going to look very different. One of the freshmen that barely played this year has already entered the transfer portal, and I would imagine that we'll be seeing a few more names join the list in the next couple weeks as Kenny gets his staff filled out and starts building his roster for next year. Outside of that, I don't think I have much of anything. Spring practice has started on the football side, and we are getting inching closer to spring game.
Yeah, I'm pretty much good. I mean,
it's 11:30 on a Tuesday. I think we're all kind of it's been a very long emotional day.
That was good pod, guys.
Yeah, excellent.
Good pod. I feel good about this one. I feel good about it.
I think that we do, tooting our own horn here, I think we do an exceptional job of addressing some of these larger issues that are affecting the program. And these are the ones that generate the best discussion. Because
they call you 10,000 foot view, LeBlue.
There it is. On that note, rate, review, and subscribe. Please. Really helps us out. Dead serious. Please rate, review.
God damn, we need to get the video component going, because
yeah,
the amount of laughs and smiles on this podcast are
out of control.
You guys should hear the stuff that happens before the podcast.
Let's not revisit
all
that.
Right, also,
no one is allowed to come at me for talking about a theoretical Brent Pry leaving. I know your heart's already broken.
You better hope people.
That's theoretical. Please do not attack me.
You better hope people jump off the pod in like the first 15 minutes and don't get to that part.
Hey, if you made it this far, we owe you something. But yeah. Go Hokies.